Thanks for pressing play. You're listening to the Brody Windsor Group on Real Estate, the podcast for homeowners seeking guidance and support on everything related to owning a home. This includes much more than just buying or selling. We've got you covered for everything from mortgages and financing to home maintenance tips, renovation and design advice, and of course, the latest insights and analysis on what's happening in our local communities. Today, we're joined by the Vineyard's head sommelier, Lucas Vlahakis. Welcome, Lucas.
Nice to see you again, Scott, and thanks for having me on your podcast.
It's great to have you. Listen, now, before we get into the types of wines that you guys are producing, I'd like you to tell us the story about how Monsieur Drouel and his wife, you know, how their dream finally came to fruition for this vineyard, and also the serendipitous nature of how you became involved.
Those are two pretty good stories that people seem to love to hear. Well, Philippe was born in France and lived in France. I believe he came to Montreal and lived in Senneville in the 70s or early 80s at some point. And he always lived in the same place, which is right by the vineyard now. And that property used to be an organic farm. It was owned by a young family. And I think the kids kind of wanted to get rid of the property at a certain point. And I believe it was really quick, this transaction. I believe they put up the sign, from what Philippe told me, they put up the for sale sign on the street. And he said he saw it. And the day after, he put an offer and they signed the paperwork and he bought it. So I think he had been raised in Touraine in France, in the Loire Valley, so surrounded by vineyards. He had never been a winemaker or anything, but I know that he'd taken part in harvest and he'd been surrounded by wine his whole life. So I think when he came to Montreal, he probably had that dream deep inside of him, but he's also working full-time. He's an osteopath. He started the School of Osteopathy here in Montreal. He has schools all over the world. So he's a very busy guy, as you know.
Yes.
But I think he always had that dream of wanting to do it. So when he saw the opportunity, he said he reacted quick and he took it. I don't think he knew what he was getting himself into at the time, but I know that was in 2011, I believe, that he bought the property. And the year after, in 2012, he started planting vines, mainly vinifera vines, so European vines. So I think he started up on the top of the property, and then he also built the stables where the horses are as well. But he started with planting Chardonnay and Chenin Blanc and Pinot Noir and Merlot, all grapes that he knew quite well from France, and then slowly worked his way down the hill to where the actual vineyard is now, what we call the Chez.
So he'd had his eye on this for quite a while then.
Yeah, I think he had had it. I think he had had the ambition always, but he lived in Senneville. I don't think he wanted to start a vineyard, you know, further out in Laval or in the Canton de l'Est, where a lot of the vineyards are. And on the island of Montreal itself, like, there's not really any space. I mean, you would know this better than I would, but there's not really enough green space to start a vineyard. There's a lot of green space in the West Island, but it's protected. There are parks and stuff. You can't just start planting things and growing. So this, I think, was really the only place that it could be done, and it turned out to be a great location. I mean, he knew you could grow things well because it was a farm, and it was an organic farm, and they were already growing the asparagus, garlic, and vegetables. So I think he knew that the soil was fertile and it could grow. But growing vegetables and growing vines are two very different things. So I think a lot of people ask me, like, well, if he started planting vines in 2012, why is it only open now in 2022 and 2023?
Yeah, good question.
But it takes time. You can plant all these vines. I think that's why when he initially started planting, I don't think he went crazy. He didn't buy, right now we're up to almost 30,000 vines. I think he might've bought a couple thousand and started planting them. And in general, vines, when you plant them, it takes about 3 years before you start producing fruit that you can produce wine with. But in Quebec, it's illegal. You can't produce any wine unless you have your domaine, your chez, on site where you're producing, where you're making your wine. So you can grow the vines, grow the grapes, and sell them to other vineyards. But he just wanted to start growing them to see, will this even produce a grape that is worthy of making wine with, or is it just going to produce like a table grape? You know,
something. So it was a little bit of experimentation at the beginning.
Exactly. And you have to, because no one's done it. Also on the island of Montreal, we know that, in Quebec anyways, we know that further south on the island, it probably will work. The quality of the wine you might produce is unknown. But there's even vineyards in Laval, like 25 minutes away from here, 30 minutes in Laval. But again, it's what they're producing as on the same level as we are.
Because I know when we first met, you know, I hadn't heard about this vineyard. And to have it so close was amazing.
It's a huge asset.
And we went by it just for a, you know, a little tasting and a charcuterie board. And you told us the story about this. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, you know, why this location is so unique. And there's some kind of environmental factors involved there.
I think the first thing and the main thing that really makes it unique is that it's on the island of Montreal. It's 10 minutes away from the West Island with no traffic. It's 30 minutes away from the heart of downtown. But it's also, there's a pretty unique and an interesting little microclimate, as you know, but we're really close to the river, which helps mediate our climate. So it keeps things a bit warmer, especially in the winter time for the vines. And we also have kind of behind us on the western end, we have like the Morgan Arboretum, and there's a lot of forest, and especially on the parts where the actual the domain is, the Chez, that's in a, kind of in a slope, so cold air will tend to descend and settle there, but we have a lot of trees that block out cold winds, and that's why especially this year we got kind of lucky with the frosts and the hail and stuff that didn't affect us at all, because we have a lot of like natural protection, and we also have some pretty unique and cool like soil conditions, especially on the bottom. We have blue clay, which is really good for red wine planting, specifically Merlot.
Yeah, and did he know that before?
No, he didn't know that. Okay. He only found out about that blue clay when they started digging the foundation for the building.
Okay.
And I believe Philippe's father was a geologist, so he knew a little bit about geology. So I think when he saw it, when he heard that it was blue clay, he freaked out because he said, oh, blue clay, that's Bordeaux, like Chateau Petrus and some really historical Grand Cru houses. They also have some blue clay where they plant. So I think he really freaked out, and I think it gave him like a sense of home, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of red wine is planted down below. There's some up top as well, but we kind of have different terroirs, you could say. So we have some Merlot that's planted down below on the blue clay, and we have some that's planted up top on a more sandy limestone soil. So I think they kind of gives different characteristics to the wine.
So let's back up just a bit and get back to how you became involved in this, because you've got a pretty interesting story as well.
That was a story of luck as well, and serendipity, like you were saying. But I was working at Canada Post. After I graduated university, I did my last semester of school in Amsterdam. So when I came back, I just had like one more class to do. But obviously over there, I spent a lot of money. So I was like, I just need a job right now that I can work and just make some cash. And so I applied to Canada Post, and I ended up really liking it. And I started working at the office in Beaconsfield, and it's a great little small office. I had a really good time there. But I ended up getting a guy who retired his route in Senneville. I ended up taking it for about like 2 months. And within the first couple of weeks, when I was driving up Chemin Senneville, I noticed on the right-hand side a bunch of vines. And at this point, I had already been about 2-3 years into my studies in terms of wine and being a sommelier. So I was curious, naturally. So I kind of drove in. I was thinking maybe it was private property. I thought maybe it was some wealthy person who had his own vines. You know, he was doing something with it. But then when I drove in and I saw the scale, I said, there's no way that this is one person's private property. And I ended up doing a bit of research, just looking online, vineyard in Senneville. And I saw that there was a couple of articles and interviews that were done with Philippe in 2017 with La Presse. They were about the opening of his stables, but they also mentioned the vineyard and what they were growing, what they were doing. And I remember reading it and being like, Pinot Noir, Merlot, Chenin Blanc, and in Senneville, like I grew up in the West Island. I grew up in Pierrefonds, and I had no clue, like most people, I think, that there was a vineyard there. And so naturally, you know, you kind of think like, well, I wonder what sort of stuff they're producing, you know, like if they're even making wine yet, like what's it going to be like, you know, kind of being doubtful, as most people kind of are about.
A little bit skeptical.
A little bit skeptical, yeah. But I was curious. And at that point, I liked my job at Canada Post, but I knew it wasn't going to be my career. I knew I didn't want to work my whole life for a pension and retirement just like that. I knew I wanted to work in this field, but it's a hard industry to just kind of break into.
So did you just go and knock on the door? How'd that work?
I ended up that week, after doing this research and hearing the name Philippe Drouel, that week I kept on getting parcels for his house. And I noticed there was like four big boxes, which were actually for the vineyard, but they all said Philippe Drouel on them. And I was like, oh, this is the guy from the vineyard. So I went to his house, knocked on his door, which normally I wouldn't. Normally I might knock, leave it on the front door, and then leave. but I was knocking and I never got an answer. And I literally, because that was right before the opening, he was ordering a lot of stuff. So I had a box for him every single day. And every day I went and I would knock and I never got an answer. And then literally on the Friday, I went to his front door and there was a note on the door that said, "I'm home. I'm in the backyard. Just call my cell phone number." So I called and he came, gave him his box. He signed it and he kind of said bye. And then I started asking questions about the vineyard. I said, "Is it you that owns that property over there?" "Yeah, it's me." And I started asking him a lot of kind of detailed questions. And he's like, why do you want to know all this? And I was like, "Well, because I'm nearly finishing my studies to be a sommelier and working. I really want to work in the field. And I just had no clue that there was a vineyard here in Montreal. And I'd like, do you guys need help with anything? Even if it's like volunteer for a bit, like, do you want me to do something?" And of course, French, very like, you know, exaggerate. He starts freaking out. "Oh my God, it's his fate.
Sign from God."
Eh? Yeah, exactly. Literally. He's like, "I can't believe this." He's like, "We're opening in a month." And he's like, "And I have no one for like front of house to do the service. And especially someone who knows about wine." He said, I have no one. I didn't know who I was going to take or who I was going to hire. He said, "Put the box in my trunk and follow me to the vineyard." He's like, "It's 2 minutes away and I'll show you around."
Well, the name even, Souffle de Vie.
Yeah.
It was almost like you were the breath of life that got this thing going too.
And so he brought me down there and it was really funny because he was showing me around the place. It wasn't all set up yet because they were building tables and putting the chairs together, but it was a really beautiful place. I was impressed when I saw it. And then I went into the chez where we actually make the wine, where all the tanks are and stuff. And he gave me a glass and he started pouring me wines. And he poured me one and he said, he didn't tell me what it was. And he said, "Well, what is it?" And I said, "Well, I think it's Chardonnay." And he's like, "Yeah, you're right." And he kept pouring me wines. And at one point it was funny. I think he went to go make a call. And so I was just kind of standing there, like looking around. And Denis, the winemaker, came in and he's like, he saw me in my Canada Post uniform. Yeah. And he's like, "What are you doing in here?" And
I'm like, it was like a test almost.
Yeah. Well, he's like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm with Philippe." And then Philippe came back in and he goes, "Philippe, why is the mailman in here with a glass of wine?" And Philippe's like, no, it's not a mailman. He's like, "He's going to be our sommelier. He's going to work here." No, no, no. And I was like, "Okay, well, wait, I didn't sign anything, you know?" But I tried all the wines and I told him, I said, "I'm really, really impressed. Like, I was not expecting this at all. The quality of the wine and kind of the typicity of the wine, which I talk about a lot even when I'm serving, but like when I'm drinking the Chardonnay or the Pinot Noir, like I know I'm drinking Chardonnay and I know I'm drinking Pinot Noir. It has that like character. It's not covered up or trying to be something that it's not, which I really appreciated. And I also could sense that these wines will improve too with some time as well, because they were still quite young when I was drinking them. And so we ended up speaking for like 2 hours at the vineyard, and he asked me if I would be willing to work there and leave my other job. And I said, "Well, I can't just leave, but I said, I'll try and figure something out." And I ended up taking a leave of absence for 3 months from Canada Post to try out working at the vineyard, never having served in my life. The first weekend I started, I was by myself because Philippe was out of town. And so he's like, "Well, if you could come in," he's like, "you'll be by yourself, but I know you can figure it out."
So that's for sure. Cause I can attest to that. Cause when we went out and when we met you, when we'd heard about this and we were just going to check this place out and see what it's all about. And you were nice enough to sit us down and start explaining. And you know, like I'm not a connoisseur by any means. Mm-hmm. Right. And I've probably been to a few wine tasting events, you know, most notably, Kim Reed, who does a great wine tasting event for every year for On Rock.
On Rock. I was at the last one last year.
There you go. Yep. So that's sort of the extent of my wine experience. So I was really impressed with the way you sort of described the different wines. And that was a question I had, was, you know, are there any lesser known varieties of grapes here in Centerville rather than the more well-known ones like the Pinot Noir and the Chardonnays?
Yep. Certainly. I mean, I think in Quebec in general, there's a lot of lesser known grape varieties that people maybe aren't quite accustomed to. Those are hybrid grape varieties. So that's usually a crossing of a North American vine and a European vine. And it genetically, it can get very complicated. But we have some really interesting red and white hybrid grapes that I think a lot of people don't know what they are. So when they see that we have Pinot Noir and Merlot and Chardonnay, they don't really want to try them. But usually I'll try and suggest, well, just try it. It's something different. And if you don't like it, well, I'll get you something else. And usually people end up being really surprised. For example, we have a white wine that we put out. That's called Saint Pepin, which is a quite an aromatic grape variety, but it's something that was new for me too, because I had never tried a lot of these hybrid grapes. So even when I initially was trying these, I said, I never tried these, but they're really interesting. And I could see how clients might be hesitant to try them, but once they do, they'll be really impressed. So yeah, it's, for me, the white, the Saint-Pépin, and the Petite Perle, and the Marquette, people will kind of know Marquette a little bit more because it's commonly planted in the States and in Quebec. It's a cold, hardy grape. But I think a lot of people will tell us that they think our example is the best that they've tried.
I like you mentioned when I was there too, how, you know, some people say, you know, who are a little bit wine snobby and say,
oh, well, yeah, we get this.
It's not like the Pinot Noir in France. Reagan, yeah. You know, and your response to that was great.
Yeah, well, that... Like I tell people, some people who come in like that, it's rare, but it does happen that there are some snobs, and that happens everywhere. But I tell them, I said, were you expecting to come in here and have the greatest glass of wine in your life? If you were, then you're thinking wrong. And yeah, I've had people tell me, oh, it's a nice Pinot Noir, but it's not. Oh, I was in Burgundy and I had some of the best in the world. And I said, well, I said, they've been doing it since the 1200s and we've been doing it for a year. So I said, You can't really compare them. And that's what I tell Philippe sometimes too, the owner who's from France, and he'll often say, oh, the top part of our terrain is more like Burgundy. It's sandy and more limestone. The bottom's more like Bordeaux. And I'm like, I understand the comparison. And I'm like, but don't try and emulate France. And I think that applies everywhere. Like, especially in Quebec, so you can't try and copy another region. We're not. We'll never be. And it's more than just soil that's going to give you a certain type of wine. It's everything.
Yeah, I can attest to it. It's like there's wines that I tasted there that I've just never tasted before. Yeah. They were like totally new.
Exactly. And I said, instead of don't try to emulate France, but try and just represent Senneville. I said, this is your terroir. This is where you're making your magic happen. So I told him, just try and represent your sense of place where we are right now.
So in terms of aging, maybe talk a little bit about that, because you mentioned the vines were you know, planted back in 2012. Here we are, 2023. So what can people expect, and sort of what factors do you use to determine that optimal length
for aging of the wine or the vines themselves?
Well, I guess both.
Yeah, I mean, as vines get older, they tend to produce. They tend to get their roots get a lot deeper into the water table. And in general, you might see on a lot of especially American bottles of wine, like old vine, Zinfandel or old vine this, or in Australia. And generally, as vines get older, they'll get thicker trunks and they'll produce more concentrated, larger berries, but less. So they'll yield less, but the berries themselves and the wine that you'll get from them will be of higher quality or just different, more intense. So the older a vine gets, usually the better. Our vines are still quite young, 11, 12 years. It's good, but it's still quite young. And then on the bottom part of the property, they're younger still. They're about six, seven years average age. But for the wines themselves, I think what's interesting is that a lot of our wines, I think, have a really good aging potential, especially in the whites, which surprised me, because you can age a white wine just as good as a red wine, but I didn't know that. Yeah, it's just different. And the only way to, I tell people, a lot of people think automatically that if a wine is old, they're going to love it. But most people prefer young wine. They want a fruity, something casual. As a wine ages, it changes a lot. Its flavor changes. You get more vegetal and earthy notes. And some people might not be necessarily accustomed to that. And even myself, I haven't tried these crazy old bottles, but I've tried some from the early 90s and late 80s. And it's a very different experience. But I think for our wines, a lot of them do have a nice potential for a few years. And certainly some of the ones that we just released this month, like the Pinot Noir and Merlot, they're still quite young now. And some clients can tell that, and some clients really like that. But I tell them, I said, if you want, buy a few and put them in your cellar and try one every year. That's what I'm going to do. That's with all of our wines. I have a few bottles of each, and every year I'm going to keep sampling them and see how they evolve.
So Lucas, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the techniques that you're using at the winery and you know, what that entails?
I would say our techniques are pretty traditional, actually. We have a really, really, really talented winemaker named Denis Richer, and he's talented for a lot of reasons. One of them is that everything basically that he's done in his life is self-taught. Like, he never went to any school to learn how to make wine. He started making wine and grappa and spirits in his garage. And then he ended up meeting Philip. Was also a funny story, a bit of a longer story. But he also, Philip ended up hiring about 8 years ago. And so he what's interesting about him is that he makes our wine, but he also works the vines in the field. So usually that's a separate position. In France, it's called the chef de culture. So that's the person that's outside pruning the vines, figuring making all the decisions in terms of growing the vines. And then usually you have your winemaker who works more indoors. Denis does both. Wow. And I try and help him do both, but obviously I'm usually pretty occupied with service and running the front of house. But Denis is very precise, and he doesn't cut any corners. Even there's certain things that, you know, I would be like, well, why don't you, we can do this to streamline this. And he's like, no, because this.
Old school.
Yeah, more old school. And he's been all over France and he's a bit like hung out with a lot of winemakers and seen what they do and then kind of tries to bring that back here.
So is he still like an old world, new world type of...
I would say it's probably more old world techniques that we're using. Okay. There's definitely a lot of techniques that I've been suggesting. But right now... Where we're at business-wise are a bit of a risk. Like, for example, a lot of vineyards, they'll use native yeast to ferment their wine. So native yeast is just the yeast that's present in the vineyard. There's yeast all over the place. When you harvest your grapes, you feel there's kind of like a film on them, and that's just yeast. So you can use that to start your fermentation, but it's not that it's a risk, but it's more unpredictable. So you don't necessarily know when your fermentation is going to start. It's less stable than if you just use commercial yeast, which... 90% of places will use commercial yeast. But what's cool for us is that now from 2022 onwards, we're trying to make our wines with zero sulfites. So that again, that's like a bit of a risk because we're still a young business. You know, we could be taking really like just be, okay, no, we're going to put heavy sulfites in the wine. And we're also organic. We're getting our certification.
The sulfites are like a preservative, is that it?
Yeah, they'll help stabilize the wine and just make sure that nothing re-ferments in the bottle and that there's no funky or anything that happens. So in the 2021 wines, which everyone's been drinking now, which you've been drinking now, there's very, very, there's probably like 1/170th of the sulfites that a normal commercial winery will use for the simple reason that our wines aren't, they're not traveling. They're not going overseas. They're not going to the States. They're mostly being consumed here locally. So you don't need to do a heavy dose of sulfites to keep everything stable and proper. We know that they're going to survive until they all get sold out. And then from 2022 on, which I've been sampling the wines that are now in barrels and stuff, where we added no sulfites. So that was a bit of a risk too, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if they're going to start growing mold or mushrooms or whatever in the barrels. And then you kind of have to adjust and work twice to kind of fix it. But so far, everything's been going really well. And
so what are the growth plans? Are you planning on keeping it local?
I don't think that's the owner's intentions. No, I think right now, this is really the first full year that we'll be open. So we opened last September. So we had about... 2 nice months of like the terrace open, and it was obviously quieter because there hasn't been a huge push for advertising and promotion. Right now, it's mainly been word of mouth and a few things that I've done here and there, like this podcast. Yeah. But it's still quite small. I think we're getting bigger and bigger, but I'm not entirely sure of all the business side for growth that Philippe has in mind. But right now, what I've found like pretty cool is how busy and how much bigger it's gotten, mainly just through word of mouth. I started some social media pages, which really have been helping. And there's been some articles written about us in the Gazette like last November that have helped a little bit, certainly with like the older generation. A lot of them will come in and be like, we read the article in the Gazette about you. And then the younger ones will say, oh, we saw you on Instagram or TikTok or something like that. You know, it's typical of this generation.
So I was interested about like what's the reaction been like from the local community and people in surrounding areas.
That's been, I think, one of the most gratifying parts is people really have 10 times out of 10 basically enjoyed their experience. And that's for me was the most important. I told Philip this when he initially hired me and when I decided to leave my job, which was more stable and more comfortable and you know, just more stable. I told him, I said, I wouldn't have left my job if I didn't have like faith in the product. Because if I had tried those wines when we initially met and I wasn't really that impressed, I would have said, well, thank you for the opportunity, but I'm okay. But I took that risk because I really did see a lot of potential. And I thought that what they were making was really unique and special. And for me, for sure, the best wines, the best Quebec wines that I've sampled. And I think a lot of people share that opinion. A lot of people will tell me this is by far, they'll take one sip of the first wine and they're like, this is the best wine in Quebec I've had.
Well, that says a lot.
Yeah.
And what are some of the misconceptions that people have about Quebec wines?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions that people have about Quebec wines, and it's kind of a shame, but I also understand, because as a consumer myself, sometimes especially now working where I'm working, I'm curious to try what other people have, because I'm not super experienced in Quebec wine myself. I've been to a couple of vineyards before I started working here, and Quebec's a hard place to grow vines. It's a hard place to produce wine. But it's getting better and better. That's the good news. And certainly with the white wines, I've had some really, really impressive stuff. Red wine is always going to be harder in Quebec, and that applies to us as well. It's just harder to produce red wine in our climate. And I think that what's interesting now is that another misconception that I've been hearing a lot of people tell me is that, oh, well, climate change, it's getting hotter and hotter here in Quebec, so it must be better for you. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword, because yeah, it is better if we have more heat to grow vines. The problem is that we've been having, every year I find our summers have been getting more and more humid and sticky, like the past few weeks, like 40 degrees today. And that can be a problem for vines, because the humidity and the moisture in the air can help propagate disease and mold and viruses. It makes our life a little bit harder. If this was a nice dry heat, then that'd be a different story. But I think that people sometimes will come to the vineyard and kind of already have a preconceived notion of what our wine's going to be like. And I really like when people are like, oh, we'll do a tasting. Sometimes I have like two people will come in, a couple, and I'll offer them a tasting each if they want. It's four small pours of wine. And they go, we'll just take one and we'll split it because we're not sure. Like, I'll try a white and a red. I'm like, okay. And then they'll try them and they oh my God, we weren't expecting this at all. Like, can we get a glass of this? We want to buy bottles of this. We want to tell all our friends. That's gratifying. I like the challenge of someone who comes in, and usually you can just tell by their attitude what kind of they're feeling. And so then I'll kind of know what to pour for them. Yeah. And then usually, not all the time, but most people are really happy that they ended up coming, and then they'll tell their friends, and then their friends will tell their friends.
That's how it was with us, I tell you.
Yeah.
I think you definitely found your calling, because
yeah,
you're a big part of, you know, the experience over there.
Well, I appreciate that.
And that's what it's all about. Yeah. You know, it's the experience of surrounding the wine and the story that goes with it. And then
exactly. It's more than just the drink. It's everything else that comes along with it. And I think for myself, that's one of the most like surprising and gratifying parts of the job is like, for me, was interacting with people, with clients, like meeting you guys and stuff. Like I'm not an introverted person, but I'm a little bit shy. And that's one thing I was worried about when I started this job, was like the service aspect. It wasn't like I was confident enough in my knowledge of wine and stuff, but it's like communicating that to people. That's another skill. You can know all you want. You can read as many books as you want, but being able to communicate that to people, that's something else. So I was a bit worried about that. And I think I've definitely improved just like chatting with people and like doing stuff like this. Like, I don't know if I would have done this a year ago.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
Because I think the thing that makes it easier is you found something that you're passionate about.
Exactly.
You mentioned it. You've got faith in the owner, in this business.
Yep.
And then you're working hard. And those three things, the combination makes for, you know, it's fun going to work, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's fun. It's been really, really fun meeting like really nice people like you, and especially like a lot of regulars. Like, I have people that'll come every week, and we know each other, and they invite me to barbecues at their house. And like, it's been nice meeting new people. And especially, yeah, like you said, that I have faith in the product. I'm never worried about, oh, I don't know, I'm not so sure about this wine, but I'm going to serve it anyways. I never have that worry.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what advice would you have for some people out there, I guess, who are looking to develop their palate and, you know, don't have a great knowledge of wine, and maybe intimidated by, you know, so many varieties out there?
It's very understandable. But honestly, I think right now is like, it's probably one of the best times to be able to expand your palate, because there's so many resources. Like when I started, my family doesn't drink wine really. My parents never really drank at all. So no one in my family really drank wine. I got into wine about 10 years ago from cooking. I really love to cook, And I remember the first time I cooked something and I paired it with a good wine. Cause I was, when I was younger, I wasn't really drinking wine when I was 18, 19. But when I started, you know, in my 20s, like early 20s, and I bought actually like a good bottle of wine and I had it with a good meal that I made, something like clicked in my head. And then you slowly become obsessed. And wine's one of those things where you could spend a lot of money. So you got to control yourself. But it just began to grow. And then when I found out that I could do courses in it, and I thought like, oh, wow, maybe I could translate this into like a career of some sort. And it was also one of those things, I was thinking about this like a few weeks ago, but you kind of go through like phases in life. Like especially, I'm only 28, so you kind of go through things that like you're really interested in, and then it kind of passes. And for me, like now it's been I would say about 10 years that I've really loved this. So I know I'm okay, but I remember like when I started doing the courses and stuff, and you're investing a lot of your time and your money. And I was also working full time. But when you're doing these classes, you have to buy a lot of wine. And you don't have to buy expensive wine, but you're investing hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So I remember thinking, I was like, I've invested a lot of time and money.
I better like this.
Yeah. It better not be a thing that next year I go, I don't really want to do it anymore. But I know it's not, it's what I think about a lot. It's what I listen to in podcasts. It's what I read. And now it's what I get to do for a living. So I think it's really fun. And I think the future is bright.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So if you could describe Souffle de Vie wines in 3 words, let's say, what would those words be?
That's a good question. That was a good one. I think unique, one. Because it is unique. Like again, I still sometimes when I'm driving to work, I still go, I can't believe I'm driving to a vineyard in Senneville. It still gets me to this day. Like it's still, and it's such a beautiful location too. Like you have the trees, and everyone always, like when they're sitting on the terrace, like, oh, it feels like we're in Europe. Like it's so nice. We had no clue. So unique for sure. I think creative too. I think we can, because we're not under like under an appellation, like in France, you always see AOC on the bottles. They have very strict kind of rules of what can go into this wine, what percentages, the alcohol percentage, the yield. There's a lot of constraints kind of. And for us, we're under no constraints. So we can kind of do whatever we want. So we can make a white wine that's a blend of Chenin and Chardonnay and sell it and people will really enjoy it. And we can do that, no consequences. We can make a rosé with 2 different types of table grapes that normally would never make a wine with, but we can do it. We had extra. So we said, why not just try and make a few hundred bottles, see if people like it, and people love it. We almost have none left. So I think creative for sure. Yeah, I think it's kind of fun to be kind of have no rules and kind of and see what works. And you can do it in small quantities. And if it doesn't really work, well, then you know for next year. But if it does work, well, then next year you can make a little bit more of a certain thing.
It's almost like you're designing a new category of wine here, yeah, right here in Quebec.
Yeah.
Which I love because that's, yeah, you're not playing by anybody else's rules.
Yeah. And that's what it's kind of like, yeah, it's an interesting contrast because, yeah, we can do like really experimental things, but then we can also do like really traditional stuff like making Pinot Noir and Merlot. And like not using new oak, so it's not too smoky and too oaky, but using restrained, like making elegant wines, kind of more in a old world French style, because Philip's from France, so he's kind of specific about how he wants his wines made. But I think overall his vision is accurate because clients really like it. And that's one thing too that I like a lot about what we do is that our wines, with the exception of one or two, they're all dry. And it's interesting for me. That's another thing that's been interesting for me as well, is to see kind of what clients want. And right now, the market wants dry wines. People are often really happy when they come here because they go, oh, thank God your wines are dry. Because a lot of places in Quebec and in North America, they'll leave residual sugar in the wines, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just a different style. It's catering kind of to a different market. And I think right now the market's more for dry wines. Maybe it'll change back in a few decades to sweeter wines, but people are really happy. And they like that the fact that our wines are more like something you could pick up at the SAQ. And maybe our wines will be in the SAQ one day.
One day.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, so that brings us to, how do people find you? You know, people are interested in this. I'm going to tell them, you know, go out and do a tasting. When are you guys open? How do people find you?
So right now we are open from Wednesday to Sunday, from about 11 till 6 or 7. We are having our websites being made now. But if ever you just Google Vignoble Souffle de Vie, all the information is there, the hours, the phone number, what kind of services we offer, and some photos. And if not, I have Instagram and Facebook, Vignoble Souffle de Vie. So you can send me a message on there and hopefully I'll respond in a timely manner.
Yeah. And we're going to post it on our,
absolutely.
Facebook and Instagram accounts as well. So people can find it.
And I have a feeling like when this podcast gets released and people who listen to it, I have a feeling a lot of people won't have heard of us. So it'll be, I'm going to be keeping my eyes open and my ears open for people saying, oh, I heard you on the Brody Scott Brody podcast.
Well, that'll be very cool. Well, listen, it's been great chatting with you. Really, same. Really interesting story. I'd love to hear how you guys have been doing. And I would tell everybody out there, go try these wines. They're really fantastic.
I think people will be impressed. And thanks a lot for having me on. It was nice to meet you, Scott.
Well, we'll have you back anytime.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Cheers.